Doha summit. A draft statement will reportedly condemn Israel's, quote, hostile acts. The document specifically refers to genocide, ethnic cleansing, and colonizing activities in the Palestinian territories. Well, now we are joined by Mr. Masoud Shajareh, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission there in London. As always, I'd like to thank you very much, Mr. Shajareh. Let's go straight into it. So Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian did call for unity just right before departing for Doha. And per your title, of course, how important is unity, specifically among Islamic countries and nations? As we know, during this meeting in Doha, there will be at least or nearly 50 Islamic countries attending it?
Well, extremely important. I mean, the reality is that international community as a whole, and in specifically the Islamic sort of world, has got a responsibility to rise up against the genocide, against the aggression, Israeli aggression in the whole region, what is being unleashed against Gaza, and indeed attacks on seven other countries in the region. And beyond that, I mean, we know the intention of this Zionist state is not just to commit genocide, but occupy far beyond what he's occupying right now in the name of greater Israel. And so indeed, the international community need to rise up to that challenge. They have failed so, but I think the responsibility now falls on the Muslim world with their commitment under Islamic and international sort of principles to rise up and to address this immediately with the urgency, because the international community have failed and the responsibility now lies on the Islamic world to unite and deal with this cancerous sort of regime.
Yes, and Mr. Shajareh, very briefly, if you please, in around 30 seconds, do you believe we will be seeing from Doha any type of real action carried out against the Zionist entity or condemnation as always?
Well, I hope so. I mean, this is the 11th hour. This is the time that you either do stand up or face the consequences of it. And I think if they fail so, it will be catastrophe, not just for the region, but the whole world. And I think they need to stand up to their both international and indeed Islamic responsibility.
Yes, well, Mr. Masoud Shajareh, Chairman of the Islamic Human Rights Commission there from London, thank you very much for joining us during this hour's top headlines. Mahdia Isfandiari, an Iranian academic, has now been detained in France for 200 days amid growing calls for her release. As diplomatic efforts continue for her release, activists and Isfandiari's family highlight the broader issues of free speech and political motivations behind her continued imprisonment.
Today marks the 200th day since the illegal detention of Iranian academic Mahdia Isfandiari in France. Isfandiari, who is 39 years old, has been detained since February 28. According to Isfandiari's friends and family, her house was thoroughly searched by security personnel, turning the incident into something eerily resembling a kidnapping. For 2 days following her arrest, no information about her whereabouts was disclosed. Furthermore, French authorities refused for an entire month to provide detailed information to the Iranian Foreign Ministry, which intervened at the family's request. The young woman is accused of, quote, advocating terrorism for having participated in a Telegram channel denouncing the ongoing genocide in Gaza. To justify her continued detention, some investigators claimed that she was acting, quote, under Iran's influence, and that this was a case of interference. Accusations her lawyer, Maître Nabil Boudi, denounces as unfounded and purely political. Iranian authorities have repeatedly called for her release, describing her detention as unjust and politically motivated. Earlier this week, Iran's foreign minister Abbas Araghchi said Tehran is close to reaching a deal with Paris that will release the Iranian female academic. He said a lot of activities have been done in this regard, adding that Esfandiari's release in exchange for French prisoners in Iran is now approaching its final stages. The top Iranian diplomat didn't give a time frame for the exchange, saying Iran's judiciary and security institutions are also involved in the process. Since her imprisonment, two requests for conditional release have been rejected, first by the Paris court in June, then by the Court of Appeal in July. Esfandiari is now in Fresnes prison, located 470 kilometers away near the capital, Paris. This considerable distance has made it extremely difficult for her family and friends to pursue her case or provide her with any form of support. She happens to be a linguist with a degree in French language from Lumiere University and has lived in the French city of Lyon for the past 8 years. She works as a professor, translator, and interpreter at Lumiere University. Activists, neighbors, and supporters of Esfandiari are denouncing what they see as a serious violation of freedom of speech. Her case is gaining increased attention as calls grow for her immediate release.
Well, Israel has intensified its genocidal campaign in Gaza, as Gaza City remains a focal point of the regime's deadly strikes. 7 people, including 3 children, were killed when an Israeli strike hit a tent sheltering the displaced families west of Gaza City. Separately, at least 10 people were killed in Israeli airstrikes targeting 2 homes on Al-Jala Street, also in Gaza City. Meanwhile, Israeli forces detonated 6 bomb-laden robots to demolish more buildings in the city. According to Gaza officials, since August 11th, more than 1,600 residential structures have been destroyed in the city alone. This as humanitarian crisis is worsening across the Israeli blockaded territory, with rising deaths from malnutrition and aid seekers being increasingly targeted by the regime forces. The death toll from the Israeli genocide since October 2023 has surpassed 64,870, with over 164,600 others injured. Well, as part of an international convoy to break the Israeli blockade on Gaza, 2 Greek aid ships and a British-flagged boat set sail for the occupied Palestinian territories.
So our aim is to, as a big fleet, manage to break the siege that's imposed by Israel, and to open a humanitarian corridor for humanitarian aid into Gaza. We want to put pressure on our own governments to also stop collaborating with Israel and stop being a part of this genocide.
The Greek ships left the island of Syros, and the British-flagged vessel left Tunisia. Across the expanse of the Mediterranean, the global Sumud flotilla presses on with its determined mission to break the Israeli siege on Gaza. Hundreds of activists from 44 countries are part of this international solidarity movement. The flotilla's departure was critically delayed this week following targeted attacks on its vessels. The first attack came on Monday when the flotilla's main ship, the Family, was struck and damaged by an Israeli drone attack in the Tunisian port of Sidi Bou Said. A second boat, the Alma, was attacked on Tuesday night. In Spain, the final stage of the Vuelta cycling race was cut short after pro-Palestinian activists blocked the route, protesting the presence of the Israeli team.
Today, Palestine won La Vuelta. The truth is that Spain and Madrid came together like never before. There will be no awards ceremony. It has already been canceled. We did it. We won today. The people are greater than everyone else. The people are greater than the government, and Palestine will be free.
Protesters carrying anti-Israel banners partly blocked the road and forced riders to stop. Clashes broke out as the Spanish police attempted to disperse the demonstrators. The disruption is part of a wave of protests that have marked the race over the past week, with pro-Palestinian activists demanding the exclusion of Israel Premier Tech from the competition amid the ongoing war in Gaza. Spanish Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez has expressed his support for demonstrators, saying he admires those who mobilize for just causes. Meanwhile, in the Netherlands, thousands of demonstrators marched through the streets of Groningen, holding a long red banner in a symbolic protest against what they describe as their government's complicity in the Gaza crisis.
More action of the Dutch government to boycott, to put sanction on Israel, because if not, this genocide will not stop against the Palestinians. And in the West Bank, they are building more and more settlements, so the two-state solution is further and further away. And they commit murders on journalists also.
We are here today to draw a red line against the genocidal violence that Israel has put on Gaza and the Palestinian people in general, and how our Dutch government is complicit in the genocide that is unfolding right now in Gaza. We are here because we think it's time to take action, and that the government is being too lazy to actually do anything to stop this genocide and the starvation of the Palestinian people in Gaza right now.
I'm here with the Dutch people to support my country and to stop the aggression, the mass extermination, and the genocide that is taking place in Gaza in a way that goes beyond all statements and beyond all events, wars, and everything that has happened to us throughout history. There is no more Gaza, unfortunately. Gaza is undergoing genocide. There is no red light for Israel to stop, neither from America or anyone else. Where is humanity? Where are the countries that can make a decision to stop what is happening?
Well, in the UK city of Birmingham, campaigners, politicians, and members of the public have gathered to tackle the Palestinian issue and Israel's occupation of Palestine. Saeed Puriza reports.
For decades, the so-called two-state solution to the Israel-Palestine question has dominated Western diplomacy, enshrined in the controversial Oslo Accords of the early 1990s. 30 years on, many here say that solution was dead on arrival.
It's impossible now, in any event, even if it was desirable, which I don't think it ever was, to actually create a two-state proposition, because the West Bank, for example, has been completely atomized by the Zionist entity. So I think we need to rip that idea up and to start again. And what we're campaigning for is a one-state solution.
Critics of the two-state solution, now pushed for by Saudi Arabia and France at the United Nations, also pointed to Israel's ongoing genocidal assault on Gaza.
What they are actually doing is consolidating the gains made by the Zionist entity, which includes the absolute annihilation of Gaza, the continued terrorism that is being taken place by Israeli settlers in the West Bank. And what they actually want to do is consolidate the 80-odd years of Zionist settler colonialism.
The debate, organized by activist independent movement, grew heated, with some arguing for a state, including all Palestinians and those who live in what's now called Israel, if they wish to stay.
Every Palestinian should have the right to return. And Israelis who decide they want to stay will have obligation to assist the Palestinian to settle back to their home, and that means everywhere.
Opponents of that view argue it resembles South Africa after the end of apartheid, when many of the immigrant white population got to stay.
The concept of, you know, what is mine and what is yours is so simple, and actually people are trying to pretend there's shades of grey. No, actually it's very black and white. There's Palestine, and there's a fake terrorist construct called Israel that needs to be dismantled.
Dr. Ali also suggests that armed struggle by Palestinians is the only pathway to one state being materialized.
Armed struggle is legal under international law. And rather than, you know, and what we should be doing is arguing for deprescription of perfectly legitimate legal organizations under international law. We should be never condemning resistance.
At the end of the debate, it was obvious which motion received more support.
With the Israeli regime openly rejecting Palestinian statehood as it commits genocide in Gaza, the debate here mirrors a wider global reckoning. The two-state solution has repeatedly failed. The consensus here, a one-state solution with equal rights for all the indigenous inhabitants of historical Palestine. Saeed Puriza from Birmingham, United Kingdom.
The Yemeni army has launched another anti-Israel operation in support of the Palestinian people, striking the regime's targets in the occupied territories with drones.
The UAV force of the Yemeni armed forces conducted a qualitative military operation involving four drones. Three drones targeted Ramon Airport in the Ar-Rashrash area, while the fourth hit a military site in the Negev region of the occupied Palestine. The operation successfully met its intended objectives.
Sariya said the strikes were carried out in response to the crimes of genocide and starvation committed by Israel against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. He added that the operation also came into retaliation for the Israeli aggression against Yemen. Sariya affirmed that Yemen will continue to uphold its religious, moral, and humanitarian responsibilities towards its brothers in Gaza until Israel's aggression against its territory ends and its siege is lifted. Thank you very much. That's all we have for you this hour. Goodbye for now.
My life has been a journey, where faith is where I roam. But steps I used to walk in don't really match mine no more. I live south for the river, where children are quick to grow. Walking down the street full of distraction, for some they call it home. So take me home.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Salam to you, dear brother, dear sister, in faith and humanity. So welcome, you are listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio, which in this program we're going to speak about turning setbacks into success. So be with us. Today is Monday, 22nd of Rabiul Awwal, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 24th of Shahrivar, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 15th of September, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. As ritual and as usual, we'll listen to the Holy Quran first. For today, verse 61 of chapter Hud. We'll listen to and we'll learn more about it.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Wa ila thamud akhahum saliha. Qala ya qawmi i'budullaha ma lakum min ilahin ghayruh. Huwa anshakum min al-ard wasta'marakum fiha fastaghfiruhu thumma tubu ilayhi inna rabbi qareebun mujib.
And to Thamud we sent their brother Salih. He said, O my people, worship Allah. You have no deity other than Him. He has produced you from the earth and settled you in it. So ask forgiveness of Him and then repent to Him. Indeed, my Lord is near and responsive.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
It is to be noted here that the Quran does not claim that Allah developed the earth and made it available to them. On the contrary, it says that He left development of the earth to them. Allusion is here made to the fact that all the means of exploitation had been readily available from all points of view. However, it is up to men to develop the land with their own toil and obtain its resources. Since such in the case, they should seek repentance from their sins and return to Him, for Allah is always near to His subjects, and accepts their requests.
Just the words of Allah, mercy and kindness and hope for everyone. Peace be upon you, O Muhammad.
If you remember the last episode of today's special, we speak about setbacks and difficulties which we can learn from. Difficulties contain the seed of our future success. As they hold the clues to what went wrong, they also contain valuable information about what could be done differently next time. Successful people often claim that they learned more from their failures than from their successes. Apparent failure often brings us face to face with realities that we otherwise try to avoid. Setbacks can make us pause and take stock, follow new path, meet new people, learn new skills, and try things out that we wouldn't otherwise have done. They also tend to build personal qualities such as resilience, coping skill, and empathy. Many successful people can point to a critical experience when they were dismissed, belittled, ignored, or suffered a serious setback. Dealing with such events, whether at the time or later in life, can become the driving force that leads to unexpected successes.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to today's special. This is Ali, your host. Today we are going to talk about how to turn failure into success. You need to sit down and take stock of the situation by asking yourself four questions. First, what did I learn about myself? Second, what did I learn about other people? Third, and what did I learn about the world? Fourth, what can I do now? So now let's see what the Holy Prophet ﷺ teaches us in this regard. Want to be closer to Allah, but don't know how. So this is what our discussion is. Prophet Muhammad ﷺ was a man that went through many difficult times. Although the final outcome, the resounding success, is what we focus on, he was faced with many situations that would have defeated him if he did not have faith in Allah and the ability to learn from his difficulties. Humankind has no better role model than the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Therefore, when we sit down to analyze our situation, we can add two more questions. First, what would Prophet Muhammad do in this situation? And second, what does Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala expect me to learn from this?
Reflecting on different Islamic topics, short commentary of the Holy Quran, hadiths of the infallibles, lessons from the life of the infallibles, all in today's special from IRIB English Radio.
Now, we'll look at benefits of failure in this part of today's special. What is it that we're most afraid of when we don't take full advantage of sound investments? Or when we put off saving for retirement for decades? When we stay stuck in a job we hate year after year? When we stay stuck in a job we hate year after year, I'd argue that we're most afraid of failing. But here's the curious thing about failure is once you face it, it becomes the enemy, you know. That familiarity can help you move on with the confidence that the stumble or fall won't be the end of your story.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I? When I have you, to doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light, guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong and
Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Come here. We want to look at ways to turn failure into success. And one of them is embracing our mistakes and grow from them. Accepting our faults is essential for fostering a positive and truthful outlook. It signifies accountability, gaining insights from missteps, and setting the stage for progress. Let's acknowledge our mistake, which can help us. These are some points. Have a genuine evaluation of the situation that fuels personal growth. Other thing is this. Observe what we went wrong, enabling us to make the required changes. We should learn from the mistakes, preventing the same errors in the future. And the last but not the least, adaptable to change and improvement, empowering us to grow beyond the challenges.
Islam is not a part-time religion. It is not a faith that we take from it what we like, and when we dislike something, we say Khuda Hafiz. Yes, it is a faith that is 100% part and parcel of our lives all the time, and it's a constitution for dunya and akhirah. And that must be always in our minds. The Quran informs us of this important necessity. وَاتَّبِعْ مَا يُوحَى إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ. So, the first passcode is taqwa. The second is do not be obedient to those who may derail you from the path. The third number in the passcode, remember with the ATM, is what? Is to reveal what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has asked you to follow. Yes, that means the seerah. That means the Quran. That means following in the footsteps of the Ahlul Bayt, peace and blessings be upon them, in every shape and form. You know, once Salman al-Muhammadi al-Farisi, radwanullahi ta'ala alayh, was walking with Amir al-Mu'mineen wa Imam al-Muttaqeen, Ali ibn Abi Talib, salawatullahi wa salamu alayh. When he was walking behind him, Amir al-Mu'mineen looked behind and saw that there was only one footprint. He said, Salman, what are you doing? Salman said, Ya Amir al-Mu'mineen, I have taught myself that I follow you in every way in my life, even on your footprints in the desert. When you step on a place, I also step on that place. Yes. Such is the following of these individuals around the Ahlul Bayt, alayhum salam, that they say, I am not going to risk it by doing that which may displease them. Yes. Here Allah says, وَاتَّبِعْ مَا يُوحَى إِلَيْكَ مِنْ رَبِّكَ. The third criteria and the passcode is to follow whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has presented to you and I, because إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ بِمَا تَعْمَلُونَ خَبِيرًا. Don't think that Allah is not aware of what you and I are doing. He is not only aware, but you know today khabir in Arabic means the expert, that who knows the best about anything.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Inshallah, we'll meet you soon. Till then, fi amanillah.
They told me that I'm crazy, who you praying for? They told me there is nothing, who you looking for? Behind your door.
Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's show, we'll be investigating who's behind the Together for Palestine concert that's being staged at the Wembley Arena on the 17th of September. In our first report, Atifa Chakra takes a look at who's involved beyond the artists who will be performing there and has some surprising revelations about a number of the behind-the-scenes individuals and organisations.
A huge concert is planned at Wembley Arena in London under the title Together for Palestine. A long list of acts are performing, including Brian Eno, Damon Albarn, Hot Chip, James Blake, Jamie XX, Paloma Faith, and Nai Barghouti. The Together for Palestine event website says, every penny donated will go to supporting Palestinian-led humanitarian organizations saving lives under fire. All funds will go through Choose Love, a UK-registered charity who supports local partners in conflict zones. So who gets the funds? It doesn't say. If we look on the Choose Love website, we find that the charity has partners in both what it calls Israel and what it calls the occupied Palestinian territories. Its Israel partner is the New Israel Fund, a Zionist funding mechanism which claims to be interested in human rights, but will not support even mild actions like BDS. Amongst its Palestinian partners are the International Rescue Committee, an organization headed by former British Foreign Secretary David Miliband, and set up originally by the CIA. Choose Love is based in the UK and the US, and amongst its many funders in 2023, Combined Jewish Philanthropies, Goldman Sachs Gives, Jewish Communal Fund, Kahane Foundation, Open Society Foundations, and Shapiro Foundation, all of which are Zionist, and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, widely known as a CIA pass-through. Choose Love says that it is administered by an innocent-sounding group called PRISM the Gift Fund. But further investigation reveals an altogether different picture. PRISM the Gift Fund was set up by Anne Joss. Joss is described by the Jewish Chronicle as an Orthodox Jew who co-runs private equity firm Regent Capital with PRISM co-founder Gideon Lyons. She ran the Zionist funding agency, the New Israel Fund UK, in the 1990s. And when younger, she traveled to occupied Palestine and spent time at a religious seminary, as well as having been chair of the Manchester University Jewish Society, which is the Manchester branch of the Zionist Union of Jewish Students. The charity operates as a donor-advised fund, a mechanism to obscure public knowledge of where funding for recipients originates. The charity, unsurprisingly, is deeply embedded in the Zionist movement. It runs the activities of the Jerusalem Foundation, which is engaged in ethnic cleansing in East Jerusalem, as well as at least two other Zionist family foundations, the Bluston Charitable Settlement, of which Ann Joss is a trustee, and the Pels Trust, which also give to the IOF and other genocidal charities. Have Brian Eno and the other artists involved been hoodwinked?
As usual, I'm joined in the studio by David Miller, who's the UK's foremost scholarly critic of Israel and our resident expert. He's a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch and a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. And I'm delighted that Vanessa Bealey is joining us once again as our guest contributor today. She's a highly respected and courageous award-winning British investigative journalist, and you can catch much of her output on UK Column and bealey.substack.com. Welcome to the show. David, I wonder whether you're disappointed in any way by the revelations about who's behind this Together for Palestine concert.
Well, I'm perennially disappointed with the Palestine Solidarity Movement, I have to tell you. But yes, this is a pretty extraordinary set of events, a range of acts playing who are known for their solidarity with the Palestinian people. And this looks like a big, you know, event which could raise significant sums to relieve the suffering of Palestinian people through Palestinian-led organizations in the West Bank and indeed in Gaza. But it turns out that the organization that is involved has significant contacts and relationships with Zionist organizations, not least of which, of course, is giving money to the New Israel Fund, which, as we know, is engaged in funding genocidal Zionist organizations and refuses to fund even limited reform campaigns like BDS. And also that it has significant funds coming from Zionist organizations, including some of the big Zionist philanthropy foundations in the US and in other places. So it's very disappointing to see that, and it really makes you wonder whether there is any part of the Palestinian Solidarity Movement as it's currently constituted which has the liberation of Palestine and the ending of Zionism in sight.
Right, okay. Well, Vanessa, I mean, what do you make of Choose Love's apparent links to the Zionist entity?
Certainly, they're very clear that there are links back to agencies that are supporting the Zionist genocide in Palestine. This shouldn't be surprising because, in reality, the Zionist entity and the Zionist movement have been infiltrating British society and British soft power NGO complex for years in order to effectively bring about the destabilization of the region. And the final solution, as they describe it in Palestine, which is the ongoing genocide that we've seen, of course, since 1936 onwards, but in intensification since the 7th of October.
Well, David, what about the Choose Love's funding sources that were mentioned in the report there?
So if you look back at their history, back to 2015, 16, 17 and onwards, you see that they get a whole range of different organizations giving them funds, including a lot of Zionist foundations, some of the big foundations in North America, the big Zionist foundations called the Jewish Philanthropies and others, and including also some British Zionist foundations who have been giving them money. And also in there is the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, which, of course, is a well-known it says in the film there, a CIA pass-through. Now, what that means, of course, is that in the in previous decades, that what would happen is that the Rockefeller Brothers and the Ford Foundation and other big foundations would take money from the CIA and would pass it on to other organizations. So it would disguise the role of the CIA in pushing money out to what were effectively CIA assets. Now, that appears to be what's happening with Choose Love, and there are a whole range of other organizations which are funding it, which indicates that there are questions to be asked about its activities. It's not just about helping refugees or relieving suffering in earthquake regions or after disasters. It's also about, it looks like, pursuing the interests of powerful actors, including in the national security state in the US and perhaps even elsewhere.
Mm. Yes, it is. Well, Vanessa, I mean, do you think Choose Love should be transparent then on who will receive the funds that's being raised or will be raised by the Together for Palestine concert?
Yeah, of course it should. And actually the organisers of the concert and any affiliates of Choose Love should be demanding transparency. When one looks at the sponsors of Choose Love, it is heavily infested by Zionist or supporting organizations and those that advocate for Israeli supremacy in the region. And therefore, all transparency should be demanded from Choose Love as to exactly where those funds are going. When they're focusing on what they term a refugee crisis, but not focusing on the cause of that refugee crisis, questions need to be raised.
Well, David, I mean, do you know what's going on with PRISM, the gift fund, which I understand is actually no longer involved with Choose Love? I mean, does that separation indicate that Zionist influences have been removed?
No, as I've been saying, there's tons of Zionist money going into Choose Love itself. But this relationship with PRISM, the gift fund, was really very interesting. It appears to have stopped from the 1st of May 2024, when the charity Choose Love has declared itself independent. Now, what would happen before is that the PRISM, the gift fund, would tax the income, and so it wouldn't all go on to the donors, the donees, sorry. So, but PRISM, the gift fund, is a really very interesting organization set up by this Zionist hedge fund manager, Anne Joss, who also is a trustee of some charities which give to genocidal Zionist organizations, both the occupation forces and indeed illegal settlements. And PRISM, the gift fund itself, actually runs the operations of some of these charities, including the Peltz Trust, which is one of them, and the Bluestone Charitable Trust as well. But most notably, and there's tons of others, actually, if you look at our website, powerbase.info, you can see the entry for the PRISM gift funds. It gives you a whole range of charities they fund. But the most important one to mention, just so people understand, is that it runs the funding operation of the Jerusalem Foundation, which we've, of course, talked about in this show before. Mm-hmm. It has a UK branch, it has branches in other countries, and it directly sends money to colonise East Jerusalem and to make sure that the Palestinians are pushed out and ethnically cleansed East Jerusalem. And this should be an organisation which should not be allowed to function, far less it's actually run by this other charity, which allows people to pass money through so you don't see where the money's coming from.
Sure. Right. Okay. Well, Vanessa, I mean, what's your thoughts then on Choose Love? I mean, they seem to give to Zionist recipients like the New Israel Fund and also to the so-called liberation of Syria.
Look, any organization that supports the so-called liberation of Syria should be considered questionable. When we look at what has happened in Syria since December 2024, we've seen the destruction of Syria's sovereignty, its ability to defend itself against the Zionist entity with collaboration from the new Al-Qaeda government headed up by Jolani, an asset of Israel and the West and of all the hostile states that have brought about the downfall of Syria. What we've seen is the expansion of Israel, of course, into Syrian territory, the bombing on a regular basis, even recently, of Syrian installations and infrastructure. So any organization that is supporting the so-called liberation of Syria is effectively enabling Zionist expansionism and Takfiri massacres and genocidal intent in the region also.
Well, our next report delves into the activities of two of the directors of Together for Palestine.
In the small print of its website, Together for Palestine discloses that the event is independently organized by T4P Events in aid of Choose Love's vital fundraising. What is T4P Events? It's a company registered at Companies House on the 29th of May this year. It has two directors, Anna Catherine Nolan and James Sadri. Let's have a look at their background. James Sadri says he is a migrant and has three links on his Instagram page to campaigns he has worked in, as well as T4P Events, there is Led by Donkeys and the Syria Campaign. The Syria Campaign is a public relations outfit created to give PR cover to the British intelligence operation known as the White Helmets, which involved itself in war crimes in pursuit of regime change in Syria. Perhaps the most famous Syria Campaign output was Killing the Truth, a dossier full of lies intended to suggest that skepticism about fake chemical weapons attacks in Syria were Russian disinformation. Anna Nolan was also involved in founding the Syria Campaign. In fact, Nolan claims to have been on the advisory board of the White Helmets since 2019 and is still on it. In 2017, she personally went to collect the Good Housekeeping Women of the Year Award given to Syrian heroes described as the Women of the Year White Helmets. Obviously, the publicity did not mention the most senior woman in the White Helmets, Emma Winberg, who ran the operation and is a serving MI6 officer, as was revealed after her husband, James LeMessurier, was found dead outside their flat in Istanbul while she reportedly slept. The Syria Campaign also received support from the U.S. intelligence community funneled through the Rockefeller Brothers Fund and the National Endowment for Democracy and other sources. This is indicated by Nolan's history with regime change propaganda, which goes back before her involvement with the Syria Campaign. In fact, she spun the Syria Campaign out of a PR firm called Purpose in 2014. At the time, connections between Purpose and the Syria Campaign were denied as a crank conspiracy. But now Nolan publicly admits that she worked on the Syria Campaign while still at Purpose. In their 2024 impact report, Choose Love admits that it gave the White Helmets over $500,000 to put on their fake show of digging for secret prisoners in Sitnaya prison after the fall of the Assad government. Even the White Helmets had to admit that their operation failed to find any secret areas or prisoners. $500,000 wasted. Why is Choose Love using a firm with British and U.S. intelligence connections to run a pro-Palestine music event?
Well, David, I mean, what would you say to those who claim that the views and actions of these people on Syria, I mean, isn't really relevant to Palestine?
Well, first of all, of course, the question of Syria is tremendously relevant to Palestine. The collapse of the Assad government was a key element of the axis of resistance, which is the only thing which can seriously, materially challenge the Zionist entity. But second of all, this is an operation which was run and directed by MI6, which is an intelligence operation, which makes these people, both of the directors of this firm who are put on this event, actual MI6 assets, right, if not themselves agents. And of course, they've also had involvement with American intelligence, the National Endowment for Democracy, as well as the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. And the NED is known as a face for the CIA after the CIA was previously exposed for passing money through organizations like the Rockefeller Brothers Fund in the 60s.
Sure.
So this is deeply, deeply concerning. And it's clearly of relevance because you have to ask, why are MI6 or MI6 assets involved in putting on an event which is supposedly for Palestine?
It doesn't
make any sense at all.
No, indeed. Is it part of some sort of sophisticated ruse, isn't it, then?
Well, we would need to look deeper. I mean, the company which is doing the PR for this has now admitted what Palestinian organizations are going to receive the funding, which they hadn't publicly done before. So we will need to look into that further.
Yes, no, absolutely. Well, Vanessa, I mean, Anna Catherine Nolan and James Sadri, I mean, have relentlessly labelled you as a Putin apologist and sought to smear you, haven't they? I mean, what would you say now, given all that's happened in Syria?
I would say that Anna Nolan and James Sadri, who were part of the Syria campaign that was established by Ayman Asfari, who is not only being investigated or was investigated by the Syria's fraud squad, but was also funding the former Conservative government in the UK during the regime change war against Syria. These two individuals that effectively ran the Syria campaign, now the Voices Project, that supported the regime change war against Syria in particular, of course, sponsoring and providing promotion for the White Helmet organization, that was affiliated to Al-Qaeda in Syria. These two individuals now have the blood of Syrians on their hands that are being massacred by the Jolani regime that came to power as a result of their campaigning for the fall of the previous Syrian government.
Well, David, I mean, you know, you've written quite extensively, I think, about the white helmets that were mentioned in the video there. I mean, did you always share Vanessa's view about the white helmets?
No, I mean, people think that I'm quite hardline on things sometimes, and I have to say that I was naive on this question. I was naive on the whole question of the Syrian revolution, so-called revolution, and I was naive on the question of the white helmets. When I first heard what people said about Vanessa and Eva and others who would expose the white helmets, I was sceptical of Vanessa and indeed of Eva Bartlett. And it was only when I started to do research myself that I realised that everything they had been saying was true. And the way that I realised the thing which brought me to the understanding that the white helmets were actually a PR construct was looking at the contract which had been drawn up by the Foreign Office to give the, what is it, £60 million that they've now given to the white helmets over this period from 2014 onwards. And the contract said that they were, that part of the purpose of the white helmets was to improve the international image of the UK government. Now, I'm sufficiently au fait with the way in which British government propaganda operates to see that as perfectly clear admission that this was a PR campaign, and what we subsequently realised it's not just a PR campaign; it was a mechanism for putting on fake chemical weapons attacks so they could provoke a reaction by military forces in the US and the UK to bomb Syria.
Sure, indeed. And when you say naive about the Syrian revolution, you're not talking about recent events, of course. You're talking about
way back in 2011, 2012, 2013.
Just to be clear what you were saying there. But Vanessa, I mean, that's a pretty ringing endorsement, isn't it, from David about your reporting. And I mean, what was it that made you suspicious of the white helmets in the first place?
I think just looking at the financial backing of what was effectively a shadow state organization or construct that was not established inside Syria, it was effectively established inside Turkey and Jordan. It was trained by British military intelligence. It was backed by MI6, the CIA, through various agencies and organizations. And it was embedded with the Al-Qaeda affiliated groups inside Syria that, of course, were also being sponsored by the West and the Zionist bloc to destabilize Syria and bring down the former Syrian government. And, you know, I think when we look at what the White Helmets were involved in Syria, they've been accused by Syrian civilians of crimes such as murder, theft, child abduction, even organ trafficking. And yet this organization funded by the West has never been subject of any kind of inquiry or independent investigation. And my question still remains, why not?
Well, David, I mean, are you concerned that Choose Love, which has given £500,000 to construct lies about the Sednaya prison, might have nefarious intentions in relation to this event then? I mean, it's pretty clear from what you're saying it is, but just expand a little bit.
Well, of course. I mean, let's remember this Sednaya prison thing at which the White Helmets got the $500,000 for. Remember, the government of Assad had fallen, and the prisoners were released from Sednaya prison. And there was this big operation. They said there would be 30,000 bodies or secret prisoners in secret sections of the prison. And it turned out that there was one person who was this secret prisoner. And they brought this secret prisoner out, and he was interviewed by CNN. And they then discovered he wasn't actually a prisoner in the prison at all. The whole thing was a fraud. And they found not one single secret prisoner, not one single secret area of the prison, and they spent all that money just for propaganda to emphasize that this is actually a so-called liberation, as Choose Love call it, of Damascus, as opposed to a Western regime change.
Yes, indeed, and the corporate media curiously silent about the reality of what was found there. But Vanessa, I mean, just finally, do you have a message for the organizers of the Together for Palestine concert?
Yes, of course I do. I would suggest that they look very deeply into the funding and the background of the organizations that are behind the concert, and they should be raising questions about where the funding will go. Their good intentions may well end up entirely wasted.